Thank you for joining us and welcome to the Future of Banking podcast series, episode 2. I'm Kimberly Waldron, co-founder of SkyParlor, and I'll be your host. Today we'll be confronting the question, or hopefully answering the question, when will banks start to prioritise SMEs? And to help answer that, we have with us a fantastic panel. I have Craig Fox, who is a director at Silicon Valley Bank, a bank well known for its focus on supporting innovation globally. I also have Mark Hewlett, Wholesale Banking and Relationship Director at EBRI. EBRI provides financial services to SMEs that trade internationally with a special focus in currency accounts, FX, hedging and lending. And we also have joining us Michael Mueller, CEO of Form3. Form3's API-driven payments platform provides services to UK, European, US banks, payment institutions and fintechs globally. Thank you everyone for joining us today. Let's get started with the discussion. I'm going to dive straight in.
I think if it's okay with you, Michael, we'll get started by, if you could kind of paint a picture for us at the moment of what you think is happening globally between banks and SMEs, if there's any initiatives that, you know, you've seen that are of note, perhaps in the last 12 months or more recently.
Well, I think from my perspective, the most important and significant development the past 12 or 24 months is probably that the SME banking sector has become more fragmented. That means there are on the bank side or on the provider side, a lot more parties offering SME services to their customers. And on the SME side, I think requirements are becoming more sophisticated. So they're asking more from their providers, which is basically changing the landscape slightly. So on the provider side, we obviously see the traditional banks. They've always provided SME services, those were largely focusing on transactional services, so payments in and out, relationship banking, lending in some areas, so traditional banking services that they've actually provided for decades. Challenger banks have come in and added to that, probably in some areas, better front-end capabilities, better mobile banking capabilities, a number of tools that SMEs can use to manage their money more effectively, and maybe better integration capabilities with other systems. And then I think there is an increasing number of specialist providers who sit alongside of those traditional and challenger banks who provide maybe supply chain financing, lending, FX, card acquiring services and the like. So I think the landscape has become more fragmented, more complicated, I think, from a customer perspective, and in some ways more difficult to navigate.
Okay. And I guess coming to you, Craig, what do you think that has done for the relationships between banks and small, medium-sized enterprises? I guess bearing in mind that we're talking about a broad sector there, from small to medium-sized enterprises, but what do you think that effect has had on the relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously totally agree with a lot of what Michael said. I think, historically, SME banking has been, you know, in large part branch or retail banking within banks. It's been, you know, very much one size fits all, you know, banking and lending solutions, coverage by, you know, generalists. You know, getting to something that's more personal and scalable is very difficult. And so I think we've definitely seen a shift towards sector specialism, you know, access to, you know, banking solutions that are more tailored to, you know, a specific type of business model or need or use case. There's definitely a trend towards, you know, everything going digital, you know, both, you know, locally and globally. And I think SMEs are, you know, I think people are generally, just as their personal finances going, you know, more digital, so is their, you know, their desire to access, you know, business banking in a similar way that they deal with, you know, their day to day. So it's becoming more fragmented and maybe, you know, a little bit more confusing, but hopefully what it's leading to is, you know, better, more tailored, more specific solutions, you know, more solution driven as opposed to, you know, product specific.
Do you think, I guess, now that the crisis that we're all living through, a push towards digitalization is happening en masse? Do you think?
I think the real focus is these companies are now wanting their bank to work within their business infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. So whether it's integration with accounting packages or payroll vendors or expense reporting or other financial systems, having that integration, I think, is really, really important and vital. And you know, we spend a lot of time thinking about like treasury automation and how can you take the manual out of the day to day. I think the focus really is more on, you know, bringing insightful solutions that are contextual, you know, to changes and challenges within companies or within people's business. I think, you know, we talk a lot about like the days of the, hey, calling to check in relationship management, I think are, you know, hopefully coming to an end, more solution oriented, you know, results, I think, is what we'll see.
So I guess then it gives out all customers within that SME bracket, no matter at what stage of the journey, an access to the same service.
Or specific, right? Bespoke for that, for those challenges or whatever business model that might be in. I mean, it might be a, maybe I'm looking at the world through rose tinted glasses, but I do think that's definitely where we're going.
I think the world needs a little bit of that. So not a bad thing necessarily. Coming to you then, Mark, I guess, Ebrie, I noticed you've been added to the list of non-bank lenders for the business bounce back loans.
The C bills, not the bounce back yet. Bills.
Sorry, my mistake. No, but I guess you kind of, you're close to the coalface, being where you sit, to see what SMEs, you know, what are they really looking for? What are they demanding at the moment, especially during the current situation?
Yeah, it's interesting. That's a, you know, fintech grew around about a bank, fintechs that were dealing with SMEs. There's a big difference between a retail and an SME fintech. Much different needs depending. You know, your micro businesses are more retail, but your SMEs, when it comes to employees, historically, we're looking for the service that a business, you know, of the larger medium size we're looking for, but the cost to serve was too high. So fintechs such as ourselves came about because of that gaping chasm between what a corporate gets, you know, what an individual gets, and an SME gets a sort of really poorer version of both, really, which wasn't fit for purpose. What we saw is, you know, businesses were wanting more of the fintech cool and funky stuff, but the last 2 months have been a game changer. You know, people are phoning their bank now. They're grateful that there's a relationship manager. They're not getting any help with chatbots. So what you want now and going forward probably is a nice mix of the both, the nice UX, the speed of account opening, but also a person that can translate what's going on. Because it's an incredibly difficult world. There's more acronyms than there ever have been. There's more every day. So, you know, you need someone you can speak to. And I think banks are doing incredibly well in that respect. So what are they looking for going forward? It depends, again, on the SME. But they're going to be looking for an advisor, a trusted advisor, to help them through this. And, you know, if a business is struggling, you know, helping them get through this. But also, if they're looking for opportunities, you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom out there, but we're talking to a lot of businesses that are seeing growth during this period and looking at opportunities. So there's two distinct types of businesses, but I think relationship management is key, and enabling and empowering your relationship managers is something that banks and fintechs should be more cognizant of. I don't think fintechs have really stepped up during this crisis, as you'd expect them to. You expect them to be able to move quicker, but they don't have the experience. They don't have the people. So I think, you know, again, you need a modern mix to be able to serve an SME today. And I think going forward, I don't want to use new normal, but I just have.
Can't help it, really. It's one of those phrases, isn't it?
But I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting where where banks and fintechs start helping. You know, it's not just the UK. We've now registered with 4 countries to lend under government schemes. So we're doing what we can to help businesses. And banks are doing likewise. I think they've behaved incredibly well. I think they've performed incredibly well. Initially, certainly in the UK, there was some negative press. But if you look at what banks are doing under the Bounce Back and other schemes, considering the short notice and how cumbersome everybody thought they were, I think banks have done well.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you listen to perhaps to the fintech narrative, there have been kind of smaller inspirational initiatives and examples of fintechs responding quickly and solving issues for specific customers in specific areas. But then, as you say, if you look at how the major banks have responded and the criticism that or the scrutiny that they're under, they very quickly utilized the digital channels with help desks and other lots of initiatives around capital repayment holidays and things like that. So I would agree, I would agree with that. And coming back to you, Michael, perhaps it's to think about why is it important that SMEs retain their relationships with banks and, still look to fintechs where they may create opportunities, but it's important that SMEs keep that relationship with more traditional banks. Do you agree?
I do agree. And I think banks and traditional banks in particular are probably those counterparties that have the most holistic view of what a customer will need, where they are, their cash flows, their inbound and outbound payments. They have history with these customers as well, and they know the management over there. So they're much better positioned to make credit decisions to help their customers in difficult times. And, I would absolutely echo what Mark said. I was really surprised almost how big banks were able to respond to a completely different work environment, how they were able to almost rewire their entire operations, how they were able to scale up their offering in some areas, and also how quickly they could actually implement some of those government initiatives. So I was talking to some sort of C-level executives in those banks, and they were almost surprised themselves how agile they can be when they need to. So I think that is probably one of the learnings here, that maybe some of the traditional banks are not as set in their ways and as static as we always thought they might be. In terms of the benefits for the clients, as I said, if you are an SME, you've been working with a particular bank for 10, 15 years, I think it's very good and rewarding to see that that bank can then also step up and provide not only the basic banking services, but also enhanced banking services to me when I need them. And as I said, the COVID crisis is one example. But I think there's also, depending on the kind of SME that we're talking about, those customers have become more demanding when it comes to the services that they require. Many of them would actually trade internationally, which is something that requires services that typically were available and have been available to larger corporates only. There is an opportunity for traditional banks, or maybe even for challenger banks, to basically step up and provide even better services, more sophisticated services to this client group. But then I agree with Craig as well. The challenge here is to do this in a very solution-focused and solution-oriented way, and not sort of just as a product, clearly, a lot of the products that large corporates, for instance, use are not really relevant for smaller customers or only a very small subset. So I think it is, again, technology that unlocks that. It is things like artificial intelligence. It is things like a solution-oriented sort of product design that combines the benefit of sophisticated services on the one hand with an efficient delivery and a leverage of the relationship that these SMEs have had with their banks for a long time. So I think this could come and is coming together quite nicely. And in some areas, that does require a collaboration between traditional banks and fintechs. In other areas, it will be driven by competition. But overall, I'm actually quite optimistic that even this crisis will actually lead to better outcomes in the banking sector in the long term, or maybe in the medium term. And I think increasingly banks are seen as part of the solution to this problem and not as part of the problem. And that is completely different from the last crisis that we had.
Yeah, not so much in the crosshairs in the same way. And, you know, they're essential, really. Well, more than essential for SMEs and other businesses to be coming out of this crisis. Do you think it, you know, just to finish off there on that point, do you think it's the fact that we're in this crisis now that the technology and the innovation and the deployment of those more tailored approaches is happening? Do you think that was just being pushed forward? And is there a reason why you think maybe it has happened so quickly but wasn't happening before when the need was still there?
I think it was happening. And the crisis may have amplified this in some areas. But of course, I mean, the crisis is, if you want, 2 months old, right? And I don't think from a solutioning perspective that much has happened or that many things have happened that weren't there before. Again, the lending schemes, the government supported provision of credit to the sector is maybe an exception to that. But what it has amplified, I think, is the need for banking to go digital even more. So for SMEs to be able to manage all of their finances, all of their engagement with banks electronically from their home office, wherever that might be, and interaction with banks and fintechs through, you know, efficient integration of other systems, as Craig said, you know, accounting systems or whatever. This is that all become more important and I think more visible as well. So I think in many ways, a lot of people right now, for the better or worse, have actually a lot of time to think about these processes and how to optimize them. And to that extent, I think it will be a bit of a sort of push in this direction.
Yeah, and there's obviously the push to communicate about them as well, which is, as you say, making them more visible. Craig, I have to ask this question, but would you think it's fair to say that some SMEs or SMEs as a group have been typically underserved by traditional banks?
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess I'll start that reply by just commenting that, like, SME life is a roller coaster, and it was before the COVID situation, and it's going to continue to be after. I feel like I've got a fairly unique, actually, perspective. I grew up in a family-owned business, third generation. My brother took it over a few years ago, and so I've kind of seen what that's like firsthand. And to a point that Mark made earlier, like, SMEs don't typically have access to a network of, you know, trusted advisors the same way that a large corporate or, you know, even a high growth VC-backed company that has a, you know, board of directors and like has a route to go or a place to go for advice and additional resource. So de facto, the bank becomes that. You know, I know, speak with my brother as he's been trying to deal with you know, deal with this whole situation back in the States. You know, they it was probably the worst possible situation. It's in the companies in the fashion space with the Chinese supply chain. Selling to retail, it's about as crazy as it could possibly be. And, you know, one of his first points of call was, you know, the community bank that they've worked with for the last 30 years, and having somebody there that could step in, understood the business, direct them to resources that, you know, the government was providing, really has been a lifeline. And then on the other side, I've had the benefit of working and helping provide banking solutions to, you know, to high growth, you know, SMEs as well. And sorry, there's a long-winded beginning to answer the question, but yeah, I do think that they've been, I think you could make the case that they have been underserved, but I don't know. I think it's a deeper question than that, just because, you know, there's absolutely been a legacy case of, you know, one size fits all banking. And to Michael's earlier point, the move to digital is absolutely happening. I think this situation has absolutely accelerated it. It's forced banks to be able to operate in a world where you can't get to a branch. You can't get physical signatures. It's not realistic to be able to do that. And yet you still have to keep the business running. So, I think the path forward is going to be, technical solutions from fintechs that have the expertise and the remit to build solutions that a bank is just never going to be able to do, efficiently. We've seen examples of that in market recently. The recent news around Bow winding down and some of that being resource being put into the metal project, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the vision is, increased solution oriented services. And I think a lot of that is going to come from, from partnership with, the fintechs that are building those solutions to essentially build a better, better solution oriented offering, right, for the SMBs. Yeah. But have they been underserved historically? Yeah, I think you can make the case.
Okay. Very honest answer there. Thank you. And coming back to you, Mark, touching on a similar point is how have banks responded to the influx of fintechs to the market, especially in the SME space? And on the same different edge to the same coin is how are fintechs approaching the banks, I guess, when it comes to that, allies or enemies?
That is a great question. So I break banks down to three categories, and that's banks that are ignoring what's going on and reliant on their client base and extracting as much revenue as they can for as long as the customer remains ignorant. That seems to be a general feel. I'm not sure how this story how that plays out. But then you've got the banks that are looking to build a more SME customer friendly proposition, either internally or externally. There's lots of examples. You could look at lots of banks in the UK and across Europe are trying to build a platform for SMEs. And then you've got other banks that are, Metal, for example, from RBS, great example. Franks, with ABN. They understand that they're losing customers to businesses such as ours and others that provide a more holistic service for businesses that trade internationally. And then you've got banks that are looking to partner with different entities. And another Dutch bank, ING, partnered with TransferMate. Banks are looking at it. The latter two more than the others, but that's how banks are generally going around it. I'm not sure what the end result of this will be, but that's how they're responding to the fintech or other more nimble banks that are providing services to SMEs. And the other question was regarding how fintechs are.
Yeah, how fintechs are approaching banks, is it going to, they want to disrupt everything, they want to partner, do they want to get, absorbed?
Everyone's on a different journey. Just become part of Santander. They invested and now own 50.1% of Ebury. Other non-banks are partnering and taking investment. Cantox are working with Silicon Valley Bank. There's lots of other examples. Of how fintechs are approaching. We always joke, if you was at Money 2020 4 or 5 years ago, it was us against them. Then it was the banks getting more interested in how do you do what you do. And now there's a lot more discussion around partnerships. I think we're now at this stage where everybody appreciates the benefit that each can bring. Banks have a massive customer base, a lot of trust. Fintechs have a nice way of doing business. They can move more quickly and they're more tailored to the customer. So I think we're in a sort of a peaceful state at the moment. That looks post COVID or just once everybody's kicked the tires and everybody's strong enough will be incredibly interesting. Mm-hmm. But for the moment, I think we're at a peaceful stage. We're talking to a lot of banks about partnerships, the same as lots of other fintechs are in the SME space. Some banks are trying to do it themselves. They want to own 100% of that, and they're going to build it. And some are doing a good job, some not so good. What can I say? The way this pans out is going to be interesting. There's going to be winners, there's going to be losers, Some are trying the whole platform approach. and some are looking at, you know, owning the whole chain.
Yeah, I think that's a very concise and probably accurate summary of the state of play at the moment there. So thank you. Maybe then coming back to Michael, if there's a little bit of flux in the industry in the way that financial services are provided, and there's still a little bit of, you know, wrestling, I guess, going on of who takes what provision of which services, and there's some settling taking place within the fintech market. How does an SME, how does the customer navigate that? And have you got any reassurances that the industry as a whole is moving in the right direction for SMEs?
Yeah, I think
Michael.
Industry,
you disappeared.
Yeah, no, I know. Sorry, I had internet issues.
That's okay.
The industry is, I think, moving in the right direction. I think, again, from a technology point of view, anyway, we covered all that in terms of the number of providers. There's more out there today, and competition is good. There's maybe one thing that, you know, we bankers, and I've been a banker for many years, sometimes tend to forget, and that is that banking is incredibly important to us as bankers. Sometimes it's not quite as important to the corporates that we're dealing with, and also the businesses that we're dealing with. So it is, in first and foremost, something that needs to work. Something that shouldn't cause too much additional effort, which basically means it needs to become seamless, and something that you can rely on when you actually need it. So in a way, it's a bit like an infrastructure sort of kind of function. The trains need to run, and for as long as it runs, it's fine. And then if there is a particular demand that you have, you want them to be there. And with the right service, with the sophistication that you need at that point in time. So I think leaves the door wide open for a multitude of providers in this space. I believe that through a good combination of sort of proper relationship banking, where corporates and businesses have the confidence that they can actually rely on their banking provider. Good technology that some of the fintechs and challengers are bringing in, and the right level of competition for certain services. There will be a very broad offering that SMEs will be able to make use of. Personally, I believe that most SMEs are still looking to not spread their business too widely. So I think their requirements are not broad enough to allow them to actually work with a multitude of providers for different services. That can get quite complicated. So the more that the various market participants can actually work together to provide these services through maybe a single channel or easy API integration, the better it will be. And as I said, that's all in the spirit of banking needs to be easy for SMEs. They don't have the resources that major corporates have in terms of big treasury departments and whatever to basically deal with day-to-day banking. I think moving forward for many of them, the best situation that they can ever be in is if banking is something that happens in the background and just works very, very little effort that you need to put into this. So I think convenience is maybe one of those areas that we haven't covered here. And again, a lot of that is provided through automation and digitization.
I think exactly that convenience plays a huge part in, I guess, the decision-making process of a business, especially if we're looking more down, you know, we could go right up to 6 million plus turnover businesses, right down to kind of the small one-man band. And I guess that convenience, that personalization, all is going to impact businesses at different stages differently, especially the lower income end of the SME bracket, which are a huge part of the economy, as we all know, are going to be expecting that convenience and personalization. I think perhaps, again, I'm going to come back to you, Craig. I know we covered a little bit about the future and what the future of banking will look like for SMEs, but from talking very specifically about the situation that we're all in at the moment with the global crisis, I mean, banks have responded, as we've all said, very quickly, you know, interest-free business banking for a period of time, capital repayment holidays, emergency helplines. It's been, you know, very quick to respond. But what I guess, is it going to look like as we move? Where's next to go, if there is anywhere next to go with that longer-term support for SMEs during this crisis? Because it will, you know, it will continue. Do you have any thoughts? Won't hold you to them, but do you have any thoughts on where that might go?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the current situation has really shined a light on what I think, you know, everybody in the industry knew, but it's just exacerbated, right, the need for you know, the banks to be able to move quickly and nimbly, you know, to roll out solutions. I think the people and the relationship management is super, super important. Right. And I think it will continue to be. But in order for those people and that and those relationship managers to be able to be given the tools, right, to move quickly and nimbly, that all has to happen on the technical side. You know, I think there's been lots of noise. You know, I've heard some other discussions, participated in some other discussions where people have very, you know, different views about the banks. You know, response and how quick they've been able to move, particularly as it relates to, you know, distribution of, you know, some of the government backed loans. And, you know, if you look at, you know, a comparison of what happened in the States with the, you know, the Paycheck Protection Program and using the banks as the conduit to distribute funds. I mean, it was an intense few weeks. I think, you know, in the UK, the argument I've heard on the other side is that, you know, the banks just, they don't have automated underwriting and they don't, you know, they can't originate loans as fast as, you know, their fintech peers would. And so, you know, the likes of eBury and others getting access to, you know, be able to participate in those schemes, I think is really important. I think the right solution, I keep coming back to the same answer, the right solution is a combination of, you know, the existing banking infrastructure and relationship manager, model, but supplemented with, you know, a scalable, digital first, nimble technology. You know, but would echo exactly what we've said. I mean, I've been really impressed with, you know, the as quick, you know, quickly as the banks have moved in terms of, you know, offering different support schemes. You know, SVB, you know, as an example, you know, announced a you know, a venture debt loan deferral program and fee waivers, and we're trying to get accredited on C-bills, and we participated in PPP in the States, and there's been a whole host of activity. I know the other banks have been working on that as well. But yeah, just to summarize, I think the future is going to be, you know, solutions that can continue to more effectively integrate with clients' platforms of choice, like having a monolithic online banking system that you expect to serve all of your clients going forward. I don't think that's the future.
I guess one size fits all becomes one size fits no one, if you're careful.
Yeah, fair enough.
And Mark, are there any examples? We've just had some from Craig there, but what's happening at eBury specifically in terms of responding to this situation?
Yeah, we've done as much as we could. We got 500 relationship managers spread across 20 different countries. So we've worked incredibly hard to help our businesses, regardless of where they are. So obviously, a lot of supply chains went down on the back of COVID, and a lot of customers disappeared or off the radar for a short period of time. We set up an initiative to start linking those. So if we've got customers that are struggling for supply, they can reach out to our relationship managers. We've produced a very simple form. They give us information. We can search our customer base, our prospect list, to see if we can put A in touch with B. It's good. That helps in a number of respects. It helps that business with their supply or finding customers. Keeps our relationship managers busy. You know, these guys are working from home now, so it's important that they but they stay mentally stimulated. So it's the gift that keeps on giving, and it makes a really good use of our footprint and network effect. So that's been good. That's gone down very well with customers. A lot of the time, those customers, you know, there's no FX in it for us. There's no lending. It's euro to euro. But we're doing that because we just think it's the right thing to do at the right time for customers. As you know, as I've mentioned, we're registered now with four government schemes. We're looking at more. We've got applications in pretty much every country. We have a footprint and there's a scheme available. So we're hoping to announce more. We're doing what we can. You know, it's, I think everybody's feeling a lot more grateful just for being, and we're doing what we can to help businesses, reaching out to them and allowing them to reach out to us whenever. I think we've got this really nice mix, you know, of an augmented relationship management. We've got a lot of tech and a lot of data behind us, but our customers still want to be able to speak to somebody to talk them through this time. So I think we're in a really good place. You know, you wouldn't wish COVID on anybody or any country. But it's been a good learning curve for everybody. I think it's a lot of people have, the unintended consequences of this are going to be incredibly interesting, whether it be remote working or how business works. One thing I'm interested in, and just to follow on from Craig's point, a lot of banks were quite far down the line looking at digitization or looking at new partners and doing bits and pieces. It would be interesting to see how much of that's on the back burner whilst people, you know, banks at the SME part of the bank, business banks, are dealing with what's being thrown at them now. So it could be a negative unintended consequence from the banking side, where a lot of their plans are now put off for 6, 9, 12 months as they reassess what's vital for them today.
Yeah. I guess some of the prioritisation as well will ultimately be driven by consumer behaviour and consumer choices and how SMEs then want to change or modify their business strategies to respond to that as we all venture back out.
The consequence is going to be felt for years. It could start in the next couple of weeks, but the positive and negative unintended consequences of this are going to be poured over for years. It's a really interesting time we live in. It's fascinating.
And just to focus on the positive there, I think working in financial services, I'd like to cautiously say that so far it's bringing out the best in the industry, the crisis.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, for once the bankers aren't getting bashed, or people in financial services in general, I think people are grateful that there is that expertise there, there is that knowledge. I think the positivity towards it, towards the sector has been good. And I think everybody was getting bashed so much, they started believing it themselves because, you know, people didn't see the good that was going on by moving money from A to B or by lending money or just doing the general facilitation of global trade. Now people are more grateful. And, you know, it's made us step up as well. I think it's made everybody, certainly on the panel and in the industry, step up and look at how they could do things better. I think it's a lot of positives from this.
Maybe one comment on the sort of question you raised, Mark, around sort of, are banks still innovating or are they putting stuff on the back burner? In Form 3, we do run large transformation projects with banks in Europe, and we were quite interested, obviously, in the answer to that question. And the good news is, none of those banks are putting anything on the back burner in this area. Admittedly, we provide back office technology to those financial institutions, which basically means we're not touching the customer directly with what we do. But what this crisis has actually brought out is the fact that cloud native architecture that is supported or can be supported in a sort of remote working environment, distributed technology, component based solutions, and all that are the future from a technology point of view. And at the moment, it really looks like banks are, if anything, even accelerating the move towards that, because old monolithic technology is proven to be much harder to run in a situation like this. So there is another theory that says, a lot of what would have been front-end development and, you know, can't get additional revenues for those providers today is now redirected to making sure that the cost base of those financial institutions is adjusted accordingly. So many different theories, but the bottom line is that we still see significant engagement from banks and fintechs on the technology side in their ambition to upgrade their back office infrastructure.
For your type of solution, yeah, it's great, and even better for you. The guys aren't commuting 2 hours a day as well, so you're probably getting about 25% uplift on their working day as well. So people that are implementing your products are probably doing it quicker.
And nobody is on holiday at the moment, right? Which is another side effect that I think we're all experiencing. So it's relatively easy to get hold of people, and those people are all working.
We've seen a big uplift in productivity on the working from home side. We've done a lot of, we do a weekly poll with our staff. We're obviously tracking the metrics incredibly diligently, and productivity has been up across the business, especially in our operations team. A lot of projects are being delivered on time or ahead of time, which is always great because it helps our product development.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, I think definitely it's not necessarily relevant to the scope of this discussion, but one of the consequences of what's happening today is, I think, is going to make everybody really rethink their physical footprint and operating model internally, and it's forced people to it's forced people into remote working and using collaboration tools and realizing that, you can continue to run an efficient, sometimes more efficient business, from home. So, even just speaking with my direct team, we had a brainstorm the other day just about someday when the world goes back to normal, if you could design a working model, what would it look like? And I think everybody said, definitely building in work from home or remote working as part of the regular structure is has a ton of value. So I think that's here to stay.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I think we're coming close to our time now. So I'd just like to say thank you so much to everybody for being so candid and open about the topics that we're discussing. I found it extremely useful. And I'm sure the listeners will as well. I'd just like to close, if everybody could answer one question, the same question. Just we've spoken a lot, I guess, about why fintechs, why banks are important to the SME market. But just a quick closing comment from everyone on why, other than the fact that they account for 60% of employment and 40% of GDP, why are SMEs so important to the banking industry? Maybe start with you, Craig.
There's something like 6 million SMEs in the UK, give or take. They consume product and infrastructure, and they're very, very relevant to payments domestically and cross-border. So it's a bit ironic, actually, that customer set, back to the point around, maybe being underserved, actually has historically had the least amount of access to scalable and integrated solutions. And I'm very happy that that looks like it's changing for the better.
Fantastic. And Mark?
Why they're so important? Consider future corporates. 25 of our 30 largest customers have now got turnover in excess of 100 million, and they started with us as a much smaller business. If you can give them the right product, the right solution, these entrepreneurs will build amazing businesses. If we can do anything to facilitate that and help them on that journey, we're pleased to do so. It's good for us. It's good for them.
Wonderful. And Michael, would you be kindly close us out with your thoughts on the same question?
Oh, absolutely. I think the most important points have been made. I would maybe throw in one more, and that is that there's a lot of innovation happening in that sector. And if you're small, you can be fast or faster than the large guys. And, if you're successful, you grow. So I think what we call SME is a whole bunch of different companies, of course, but there are very forward-looking, innovative, and very exciting and interesting enterprises in there. So to work with those is, I think, very, very beneficial to banks as well. So not all of the major innovation happens in large organizations. Actually, a lot comes from the smaller end of the market.
Great. Well, thank you to all three of you for your time, and thank you for participating. Thank you for joining us today, and thanks again to our fantastic guests, Craig, Mark and Michael. I hope you all enjoyed the discussion as much as we did. For more information on the subject, the guests or forthcoming episodes of the Future of Banking podcast, please visit thefutureofbanking.info/podcast. I'm Kimberly Waldron. I've been your host, and I look forward to welcoming you back soon.